All right, welcome back to the communication class. On this lecture, we're going to talk about the communication objective of using PowerPoint, pics, and videos. So any kind of media. PowerPoint. That's in the Microsoft world and in the Mac world. I forget what it's called. Wally, what's it called?
Keynote,
yes. I use PowerPoint. A lot of the world, I think, does. Anyway, they all sort of do the same thing. Now I want to talk about some of the advantages of PowerPoint. First of all, it's a visual outline. You can say things, but then now you can see them, especially when you have different points. You're going to make a list of five things. You can say the first two, and they're still there, so people can sort of see where you are in the big picture. People can just read along. It's easy to reproduce in the future. Once you make a PowerPoint presentation, a year later you can use the same presentation. All the slides, all the notes are still there, so it's easily reproduced. If you're teaching people and you use a PowerPoint to teach them, they can take that same PowerPoint and use it for someone else, somewhere else, so it's easily reproduced. Number four, it's easy to follow, just like here we're going. Number one, visual outline, can read along, easy to reproduce, easy to follow, and that's what you're doing, you're easily following. Easy to hand out, you just have to email the file to somebody and they can review it. For example, in this class, you want to watch it again, it's easy to do. Disadvantages. There are some disadvantages. PowerPoint can compete with the speaker. I'm trying to say things to you, and I maybe have some stories, but sometimes the PowerPoint is more interesting than the speaker. The quotes that you use from other people, the visuals can be more stimulating than the actual presenter. Number two, speaker often in the dark. So here we have a nicely lit television screen, so you can see it very easily. And I'm sitting right under a light, so you can see me. But a lot of churches, a lot of venues, in order to see the screen, they turn the lights off. So then you have a speaker talking to you, and all the emotion or the lack of emotion, the smile, the twinkle in the eye, you don't see those things very clearly. The thing on the screen overpowers the person, and the person is in the shadows. Number three, speaker often does not know what his next point is until he sees it along with everyone else. So when you make a presentation on a PowerPoint, you tend to put things in some kind of a logical order, but it's not in your head. You know, when I preach a sermon, generally I don't have PowerPoint, but I know what I'm going to talk about. It's all following a pattern that I have in my head. But PowerPoint, I don't, you know, right now, I right after the PowerPoint disadvantages, I'm not sure what's next. And so I'm as surprised at you as you are when I see it. Speech can follow into this pattern. Slide, explanation, slide, explanation. Like I'm doing right now. I show you a new slide, I show you some words, and then I say something about it. Then we go back to the slide, we see it, and then I say something about it. And it kind of goes into that pattern. And a lot of times when you get into a pattern, that's when people go to sleep or are distracted. Number five, can often lead to an information dump, like I'm doing right now. I'm giving you 5 points so far. Now, if I were to ask you to repeat all five, you'd be like, something about in the dark, something about, I don't, you know. It's hard to remember a list of 10 things. Six, speeches fall into a predictable pattern. Seven, often speakers create their talk on PowerPoint, and therefore there's no... When you write something in PowerPoint, you tend to think slide by slide by slide by slide. You don't think about the whole. You don't think like, hey, there's three large points, and then there's points under those three large points. It just becomes slide 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10. So it's hard to hang on to the whole talk. All right, PowerPoint tips. Number one, make sure speaker is lit up. Number two, don't use PowerPoint for everything that you can say. Use it when it makes sense to use it. So that's a trap that PowerPoint users often fall into. Now, we do it here because we want it reproduced. We want you to be able to look at it again. There'll be quizzes that you have to take. You have to easily find the material. But when I give a sermon, generally, I try to limit PowerPoint to where PowerPoint actually makes sense. I don't need to make everything that I say something that you read along. Otherwise, I might as well just print it off and hand it to you. Three, with transitions and animations, generally stick with fades. Avoid tacky stuff. So you notice that when I go from slide to slide, it just fades from one slide to the next. When I go from sentence to sentence, it just fades. It doesn't do checkers and boxes and flying things. And there's all these different wipes that you can use in PowerPoint. Sometimes people have different ones. You know, it's speckled. It's like a comet coming in. It's a swirl. It's a blinds that open. And all that, it just becomes very distracting. You don't want your PowerPoint distracting from what you're saying. You want it to add to what you're saying. Use a little variety. Okay, don't use the same font every time, the same color. Take advantage of all the different things it can do. All right, pics. So now we're moving beyond PowerPoint, although pictures can be put into PowerPoint or they can be independent. Advantages of pictures. A picture is worth 1,000 words. Sometimes a picture says more than what you could put into words. Number two, can illustrate a point. You know, if I'm talking about Albert Einstein, it might be good to see what Albert Einstein looks like. Disadvantages can overpower the message. Again, people come to hear you speak. They don't come just to watch a picture book. And sometimes the picture can overpower the speaker. The picture is more interesting. The story that the picture tells is more interesting than the person telling the story. Can take audience down an unintended path. When you show an emotional picture, all of a sudden people are now thinking about that. You used it for a particular illustration or for a reason, but now that reminds people of something, and now they're thinking about that. I once did that with, it wasn't a picture, it was more of an object lesson. I had a funeral director bring in a casket, and I had it wheeled up to the front of the sanctuary, and I said to people, you know, this isn't the casket of the person that you just last went to the funeral. This is your casket, because you won't be around to see what it looks like. I thought we should look and see what it is. So I took it and took the insides out and showed everyone what it was. So I was trying to illustrate something that you're going to die one day and you should think about life from the end. You're going to die, so what does that mean for the rest of your life now? But what happened, the image was so powerful, it so reminded people of a lost one that they loved and that's gone now, that they couldn't get past that. They didn't hear what I was saying or my intention for the illustration. They went down their own. It was like more powerful than what I was trying to use it for. That's when the image takes over your speech. Speaker has little control over where an image will take people. Images can be emotional. Different people have different emotional attachments to different images. And you may have a purpose, but the image is going to do what it wants to do. All right, I'm going to show you a use of images. This is sort of a map of Jerusalem. This is 2,000 years ago, so we have Jerusalem here. And then we have the Kidron Valley here. It's a pretty steep valley. And then we have the Mount of Olives. So Jesus, people are guessing that Jesus had his Last Supper with his disciples somewhere in this part of the city. then they went out and they go down to this valley and they go halfway up this mountain. It's quite a hike. It's at least a half a mile or more, three quarters of a mile. So they had to walk all the way up here, and here's where the Mount of Olives are. Okay, so I have a map showing you that, but, you know, what does it look like? So this is sort of a, in Jerusalem, this is a, sort of a model, like a, I mean, it's a huge model. You can see how big it is. So here would have been where that upper room was. And they would have had to go out the city and go all the way to this valley, all the way up here to the Mount of Olives. So you get more of a 3D view here, but we still don't quite get it. Okay, so they had to leave here, go through the valley, come up to the Mount of Olives, and here's the Mount of Olives. In fact, some of these trees existed at the time of Christ. Some of these trees are over 2,000 years old. Now, is this the exact spot? Well, we don't know. But this is where the Mount of Olives were, okay? So, now I bring you back. The Mount of Olives is here. They had to go through the valley. It's overlooking the temple this way. So now we're looking from the Mount of Olives through the Kidron Valley up the hill, so you can see how steep that is. This is the walls of Jerusalem. So they had to come out, walk all the way through this valley, and then up the hill. So I couldn't explain this to you without using these pictures. You can sort of see it or visualize it. Here, you're looking from Jerusalem, from the walls of Jerusalem, down through the valley, up to the Mount of Olives. This all was the Mount of Olives here, the lower part. All right, so we're back here. This is the direction we were looking. We're looking from the Temple Mount across the valley to the Mount of Olives. All right, here's more of an aerial view. Here's the temple. Mount of Olives over here. This is where the upper room was. And then here's some different options in terms of where Jesus was crucified and where the guard or the tomb was. So here's the traditional place just outside these city walls. But here's another area. It's called the Garden Tomb. There's like two options. So from the Mount of Olives, remember Jesus gets arrested and he's taken to the Antonia Fortress to go before Herod. So you can kind of see he had a long long ways to go. Okay, now here we're looking from this side. So the Mount of Olives is over here. Kidron Valley is right here. Here's the Temple Mount. Here's the fortress where Pilate would be. Here's the traditional place of just outside the city gates. Now the city walls go way out here. But in Jesus' day, they went here. This is the traditional place of Golgotha. The Church of the Holy Sepulchre is here. And then outside of this gate would be that Garden Tomb. So we're back here. Just want to show you all of that again. Back here, you can see that. This is inside the Church of the Holy Sepulchre. This is, in fact, under this altar, there's a little hole in the ground. You can put your hand in and touch the rock of Golgotha. At least that's where traditionally people think that was. This is just a couple hundred yards away. This would be the tomb. And they built this little church structure inside this domed church to cover it up, and you can go inside and see the cave. Okay, so that's in this region. The other option is the Garden Tomb, which is just out this city wall. So this one's outside here, this one's outside there. Both fit, you know, the description. And this looks more like what we think of. And this is an actual tomb from 2,000 years ago. We don't know exactly if it was Jesus' tomb or not, but that's what it looks like. Now, what's very interesting is Golgotha is translated the place of the skull, and in about 100 or 200 yards from where that Garden Tomb was is this rock structure. Now, this whole rock structure in the Garden Tomb is right along the main highway It was the main highway going out of Jerusalem. And so a lot of people think where they would crucify someone is not on some hill, but along the main highway as a deterrent. So people going by would see these men being crucified and be motivated to not do whatever they did. So just outside this property called the Garden Tomb is this rock formation. And here's a picture from about 80, 90 years ago of that rock formation. And you can see it looks like a skull. Those are the two eyes. And you can see that it sort of has that look like a skull. So this is the main road. There's the place of the skull. So people that make this or propose that this is the actual site of Jesus' crucifixion would say the crosses were put alongside of this road, and then the burial grounds would be like a couple hundred yards that direction. This, by the way, right now where that rock formation, the place of the skull is the bus depot. So there's nothing there, which to me is kind of interesting. I mean, the place where Jesus maybe died, the most important event in world history, perhaps second to the resurrection, happened right here, and it's a bus stop. It's a bus station now, and from the grounds of the Garden Tomb, you can see these bars and so on, you can look over at it. So it's like we've not made a shrine out of it. The traditional place, it's got a big church over it, and it's filled with candles and incense, and people come, and they almost worship the place more than what Jesus did on the cross. So I kind of like this. Now all right, so what are some advantages to this kind of thing? Well, let me just go back to these pictures a second. So I can tell this story. I use this in my church to talk about the options for where Jesus' death and resurrection were, and to give people a feel for Jerusalem and that last night Jesus going to the different places and where he was arrested, where he was betrayed, where he had to go before Pilate. And these were long walks that he had to take. And it just becomes more real. And with pictures, you can actually take people there. And people can sort of see it and get it without having to travel all the way to Israel. All right, so videos, advantages. There's a lot of material out there. There's so much material. Almost any subject you want to deal with, there's someone who made a video of it. You can make your own videos. You take your phone and you just turn it on. And what's interesting is sometimes what I will do is I'll make some kind of announcement or some kind of talk on my phone. I will send it to our projector at church, and people listen more to my video than to me personally. In part because I'm, 10 feet tall, and I don't know what it is. They can see your facial expression, or we live in a very screen-conscious world. There's a lot of material out there. It's relatively easy to use. You can find, old speeches. President Kennedy here in the United States, you want his speech about the dream of going to the moon. You can get him actually saying those words. So it's amazing what you can find. You can enhance a speech. You're talking about some historical event, and now you can show pictures of it, or you can get some expert saying something about it. It's great for pastoral care messages. A couple weeks ago, we had one guy got in an accident, and he was in the hospital, and I didn't know if he could have visitors or not, so I just made a video. Hey, Schaefer, I hear this happened to you, and I know it's something you're going to have to deal with. The recovery is going to be a long time. Just remember, God is with you. Deuteronomy 31, verse 8, the Lord himself goes before you, and he will be with you. He will never leave you or forsake you. Do not be afraid. Do not be discouraged. I could share a verse. I could share a prayer, and I could just immediately send it to him, and he could watch it whenever he was able to watch it. So I could, instead of driving half an hour there, waiting, maybe not getting to see him, I could just do it. I could just do it right now. And you can do a lot of your pastoral care that way. Number five, it's great for getting info out to a group of people. So a lot of times, I have an associate pastor at our church. A lot of times after our staff meeting, we'll just get the phone out and we'll just get up, both be on it, and we'll say, all right, Soul Pathway, here we are. What's the update? Well, we got this new thing coming up this Saturday, if some of you are interested. And we just sort of run through some of the things that we would say. And what's weird is if we did that on a Sunday morning, if we just did it live, stood up in front of church and talked about things that are coming up and what's happening, people would just tune us out. But because we make it on a video and they see you up close and personal, and usually we have a little bit of humor going back and forth, people will actually watch it. Disadvantage to videos. Speaker knows the context from which he took a clip, but the audience may not get it. So that's the downside. A lot of times people will string videos and pictures and all this multimedia. And, you know, I'm into a subject, I'm trying to preach on something, and then I think, well, I'm going to show this video. And I show a little clip of some movie. Now, I understand the whole movie. I understand how this clip fits into the thing that I'm talking about. But someone that's never seen the movie, they get to it, they have no idea what's happening. You know, from a 30-second clip, they don't get what the video was about, and they don't get how it relates to your message. And that's often the case, because you're into it. You know what you're doing. You understand how all these pieces go together. You've been over the ground many times. But a first time here is like, I don't know. I don't know how these things fit together. Sometimes it's hard to get into a short, unknown scene. I mean, you show a video clip, and I don't. If you're like me, sometimes just the sound quality isn't quite there. I don't even know what people are saying at first. My ears have to get used to it, or the lighting, or I don't know who's who. I don't know who's speaking. I can't keep one character straight from the other one. So the whole context of what's going on, I may not get. Problems and delays with the projection. Oh, all this tech stuff and the speaker thing doesn't work, or the sound is just a little bit off, or we can't get the thing to do color or whatever it might be. All these technical problems. Video may overpower speaker if good, or be a distraction if bad. Sometimes the video is so powerful that when people leave church on that Sunday morning, all they can remember is your video clip. They have no idea what the passage was. Or the video is so bad that it becomes a distraction thing. And so again, they're moved off from what you're trying to say. All right. So anyway, I'm just trying to give you an overview of the different things you can do. PowerPoint is a good thing, but try to use it when it makes sense. Don't just keep using it. People don't need all 10 points listed. They need the big picture. Or if you tell a story, sometimes just telling the story. And sometimes I want to do a visual, and the visual's there. Here's Abraham Lincoln, and I want you to see this, and this is where he's born. Here's his log cabin, and so on. And all of a sudden, it's a whole lesson on Abraham Lincoln, and not the thing that I really want to communicate. Abraham Lincoln is just my example. And sometimes just telling the story. Sometimes it's tempting to have the video clip do its thing. So in the video clip, something is happening, and the Titanic has gone down, and the father is helping the child into the boat, and you actually see it from a movie. So they're watching this thing, but it's only a 3-minute thing. They don't know who's who. The quality isn't that good. They're not into it. Whereas sometimes you can just tell the story. You know, the father's standing there at the edge of the deck. His daughter and his wife are getting into the boat. The daughter's got a hold of the dad's hand, and the last thing he says is, "Be a good girl and hold on to mommy's hand." And he hands the girl's hand over to mommy. And that's the last time that the young girl saw her father alive. Sometimes just telling the story in a dramatic way is better than watching a 2-minute middle of the clip thing from some movie and people can't quite get into it. So don't let your videos and your pictures take away your own storytelling. people still respond best to someone who's using their face and their emotion and the words and acting it out. Act out it live rather than just always showing picture. Now, sometimes it's good. You can enhance it. But I'm telling you, the tendency is to overuse and abuse PowerPoint, pictures, videos, rather than use them. Use them to enhance your talk. All right. So this week, as you go out, try to, you know, if you're giving a speech, try to, maybe that's the goal. Just try to limit yourself to, you know, three essential things that you're going to do, three powerful things that you're going to use mass media to accomplish. We'll see you real soon.